Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me Mickey Fulp, Michael S. Mickey Fulp. Mickey's his nickname. Everybody knows him as Mickey. He is a certified professional geologist with a bachelor's of science in, that is in earth sciences, with honors from the University of Tulsa, and a master's degree in science from in geology from the University of New Mexico. He has over 30 years of experience as an exploration geologist, really in the process of searching for economic deposits, both in base metals and precious metals, also coal, uranium, oil, and gas, and water, one of the most precious things of all, of course, water, in North America and South America, as well as Europe and Asia. So he's really had quite a background. Mickey has worked for junior explorers, major mining companies, and investors as a consulting economic geologist, specializing in geological mapping, property evaluation, and business development. From 2003 to 2006, Mickey made four outcrop ore discoveries in Peru, Nevada, Chile, and British Columbia. He is well known and highly respected throughout the mining community for his ongoing work as an analyst, writer, and speaker. His investment criteria is to choose companies that have a strong chance of doubling in share price in 12 months or less. And you can follow his work and sign up for his newsletter at mercenarygeologist.com. That's mercenarygeologist.com. Welcome, Mickey, to Turning Hard Times into Good Times.
Thanks a lot, Jay.
I have to ask you, Mickey, because we've had now talked to Arch Crawford, Bob Hoy, and Brent Cook about global warming. Any thoughts before we launch into what we really want to talk about, exploration and mining exploration companies?
Well, certainly, there's no doubt the Earth is warming, although it has cooled over the last couple of years, mainly due to lack of sunspot activity. But the long-term trend is warming.
Mm-hmm.
The question becomes, how much of this is the natural process of the ebb and flow of the Earth's temperature and how much is man-caused? I think that's equivocal. Personally, as a trained geologist, I tend to think that the Earth is a very big system and that man can only have a small input into its characteristics and its function. Therefore, I would say that most of global warming right now is a fact we're coming out of an ice age, and the chances are we will go into another ice age before we get to the point where we were when the dinosaurs roamed, and that was subtropical swamps over most of the Earth.
Yeah. Well, then there's a question we didn't even get to ask Brent or Bob Hoy about, and that is it all bad that we have a global warming trend? I mean, it may have some benefits, I suppose, along the way as well.
Well, I think it certainly will, but it is what it is, and there's nothing we can do about it, in my opinion,
right,
other than try to cut down on greenhouse gases, which is a noble thing to do, but what effect that will have, we don't really know. But it's if you can't change things, why worry about it? That's kind of my I'm somewhat of a, although I don't have much religion, I probably have as close to a Buddhist philosophy as anything. So live and let live. Don't tread on me. I will not tread on you. And we take it as it comes every day.
Well, a fatalist opinion or a fatalist attitude, I guess. And in fact, if you are correct and it's mostly Earth or solar generated planetary influence on what goes on here on Earth, then you know, there's not much we can do about it. But I guess that's the reason this is such an important issue, is, you know, to what extent is it man-made, to what extent is it beyond our control? And that's certainly something I'm not qualified to determine. And certainly, as I was suggesting to Brent when he sort of surprised me with his view that I wasn't expecting, that maybe we should have a scientist come on and have a debate on this show who could monitor the discussion. But anyway, let's get back to down to something I know a little bit more about, and that is mining and mine exploration, although you are a geologist, so I look to you, Mickey, for some help here today. You are mostly involved in exploration. Are you at all concerned, or do you invest in companies that are in production?
Well, as time goes on, I have increasingly taken on companies, and it's a natural progression of the business, because several of the companies I cover and follow, they started out as explorers, and now they're on the verge of permitting and development and feasibility studies. Mm-hmm. So natural progression has been that as time goes on, I get more and more involved with miners, although I generally think the most upside in the business is with the advanced explorers and perhaps the prospect generators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed, there is sort of a curve there, isn't there? You have when the discovery is being made and something comes into focus as a viable deposit, and indeed if it's a large-scale one, then you can see the stock price rise very dramatically for a period of time. After the discovery is made, then you go through several years of environmental studies and feasibility studies and the like, and the share price can sort of meander around sort of sideways. Isn't that right? That's sort of the pattern?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So there's this so-called dead time when permitting and feasibility studies, of course, can move a market, but the permitting and all that, which can take quite a long time, is not news that moves the market. So certainly we do see dead times between, a measured and indicated resource and then the next material news that could move the markets, generally a pre-feasibility study, and that can be a year or two process.
Right, and you said when we introduced you, you're looking for companies that can double within the next 12 months, so I would imagine that gets more difficult once discoveries are made.
Well, that's true. So it comes down often with me, there are trades and there are investments, and the longer-term companies that I have picked, generally I pick companies that have a good chance of developing an economic mine to begin with, oftentimes I'll have a trading position and in those core companies that I think really have a good chance, I have what I would term an investment position, which is waiting for the big kill, if you will.
Mm-hmm. We talked to Brent Cook about fatal flaws. I know, in talking to you in the past, you were a big believer in fatal flaws. I think it was, it was Rick Rule that said at the PDAC here, he was telling the people he was speaking to that their job is to try to figure out how to eliminate those, I don't know, several hundred companies out there on the floor of the PDAC as quickly as possible and focus in on the companies that have some real progress, some real promise of success. And so how do you look for fatal flaws, Mickey? What do you look for in a company that would say, I don't want to waste my time on this one, I want to go to something else?
Well, let me step back just a bit and second what Rick Rule has said. There are, to my count, and this is not up-to-date information, somewhere around 1,750 to 1,800 active junior resource companies on the venture and the Toronto exchanges. So that's way too many to look at. So it becomes a process of quickly eliminating them. And being a geologist and, you know, from my past association with you, and I'll give you a little credit, my first job as an analyst started 5 years ago this week, and it was with you doing some analysis on companies you covered.
Yes, indeed, and I didn't realize it was that long ago.
Well, time flies, doesn't it, Jay? You know, I had to go back and look at it 5 years ago this week. I was retained by you to look at some of the companies. So we want to eliminate those with fatal flaws as quickly as we can. And being a geologist, I find the best way to eliminate probably about three-quarters of the company, and let's just call this a top cut, much like a cut on a high-grade gold assay. Mm-hmm. We want to cut out the outliers, and in this case, that's most of the companies. As a geologist, I can look at projects. I have a criteria I use that allows me to filter out many companies very quickly, and, you know, I know you have a significant amount of geological education, and so the deal is we need to look at companies that fit the junior model, and that would be short lead times to development, because an average junior has a lifespan of 5 to 8 years, low capital expenditures, because a company by itself, a junior, could maybe raise $50 to $100 million, put a mine in production. Not much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
We want to look at low-cost producers, and this comes from what everybody in this business who's an analyst or a geologist or a financier knows. You need to be in the lowest quartile of peer production within the metal or metals that you produce. So you want to be in a low cost producer. And then a company needs multiple exit strategies, because selling to a major, which used to be in previous booms, was the criteria, oh, we're going to sell to a major. Well, maybe 1 out of 100 or 1 out of 200 of the 1,750 juniors will ever achieve that. So by taking a project and looking at the project, I, as a geologist, can make a very drastic top cut, and the idea is to eliminate as many companies as quickly from further consideration.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, okay, so my engineer is telling me I only have a few more minutes left. What are a couple of your favorites? Let's say in the gold sector, do you have a top pick or so you'd like to tell me?
Yeah, I'll give you some top picks, and I'll say, first of all, my favorite deposits are open pit or heap leach oxide gold deposit, oxide copper deposit, oxide uranium deposits. And so within that, those categories, in gold space, perhaps my favorite right now would be a new company called Brazil Resources, BRI, on the venture, a new explorer in Brazil with the same management that's been very successful with a uranium company called Uranium Energy Corp.
Mm-hmm.
In copper space, my top pick would be Curis Resources, which is an in-situ recovery well field project in the heart of porphyry country in southeast Arizona. It's also a Hunter Dickinson company. Mm-hmm. It has no technical risk. The only risk remaining is financing. Well, it's a Hunter Dickinson company, so I don't think that's particularly onerous. And and it has one more permit before it can be in production. Should produce copper this year. In uranium space, my favorite is and has been since you and I had an association back in the summer of 2007 would be Strathmore Minerals, well on its way to development of an open pit heap leachable uranium deposit in the Gas Hills of Wyoming.
Oh, okay. And where do these companies stand, Mickey, with respect to that curve we were talking about in terms of share prices? I would gather the Brazil Resources, which I know something about, is still early, and so investors might catch a big upswing as that develops. Is that right? And the copper company you just talked about sounds like it's more advanced.
Yeah, so Brazil Resource is an early company, but they have a stated goal of acquiring through M&A activity in the near future advanced project, gold project, or projects in Brazil. Curis is in that somewhat dead zone right now. It trades at about 90 cents or a dollar and is likely to have catalysts in the near term with pre-feasibility study and the final permit to go into test production this year. Strathmore is a uranium development company, again in permitting and a flat stock price for quite a while. You know, Jay, I'm a contrarian, so I generally pick things when they're unloved, unknown, or undervalued. So I would say that's the case with all three of these right now.
Mm-hmm. And those that are more advanced, sort of at the flat line, do you see them having a lot of growth potential then going forward?
Yes, absolutely. And my criteria for picks is always double in 12 months or less. We have not achieved that with Brazil or Curis, but I picked Strathmore Minerals in probably about 2.5 years ago, maybe even 3 years ago now. It was a 22-cent stock.
Mm-hmm.
It went to, if memory serves, $1.58.
Mm-hmm.
Pre-Fukushima, it currently trades at about 50 cents.
Oh, well, so that was a very devastating event. Not a bad result. We're just really out of time. Mickey, tell our listeners once more what your website is so they can follow your work.
Yeah, it's mercenarygeologist.com. I also run a website in Chinese, mercenarygeologist.asia. The best thing about my website, my newsletter, everything I do is it's free. I run a sponsor-based model. I have to say that the three companies I've named today are paying sponsors of my website, and I am, of course, a dedicated shareholder.
Thank you very much, Mickey, for your wisdom and passing it along to our listeners. We'll have to have you back again sometime in the not-too-distant future.